and lustrous Calypso quickly led the way as he followed in the footsteps of the goddess. They reached the arching cavern, man and god as one, and Odysseus took the seat that Hermes just left, while the nymph set out before him every kind of food and drink that mortal men will take. Calypso sat down face to face with the king, and the women served her nectar and ambrosia. They reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they had had their fill of food and drink, the lustrous one took up a new approach. So then, royal son of Laertes, Odysseus, man of exploit, still eager to leave at once and hurry back to your own home, your beloved native land? Good luck to you, even so. Farewell. But if you only knew down deep what pains are fated to fill your cup before you reach that shore, you'd stay right here, preside in our house with me, and be immortal, much as you long to see your wife, the one you pine for all your days. And yet, I just might claim to be nothing less than she, neither in face nor figure. Hardly right, is it, for mortal woman to rival immortal goddess? How? In build? In beauty? Ah, great goddess, worldly Odysseus answered, don't be angry with me, please. All that you say is true, how well I know. Look at my wise Penelope. She falls far short of you, your beauty, stature. She is mortal, after all, and you never age or die. Nevertheless, I long, I pine all my days to travel home and see the dawn of my return. And if a god will wreck me yet again on the wine-dark sea, I can bear that too, with a spirit tempered to endure. Much have I suffered, labored long and hard by now in the waves and wars. Add this to the total, bring the trial on. Even as he spoke, the sun set and the darkness swept the earth. And now, withdrawing into the cavern's deep recesses, long in each other's arms, they lost themselves in love. When young Dawn with her rose-red fingers shone once more, Odysseus quickly dressed himself in cloak and shirt, while the nymph slipped on a loose, glistening robe, filmy, a joy to the eye, and round her waist she ran a brocaded golden belt, and over her head a scarf to shield her brow. Then turned to plan the great man's voyage home. She gave him a heavy bronze axe that fit his grip, both blades well honed, with a fine olive haft lashed firm to its head. She gave him a polished smoothing adze as well, and then she led the way to the island's outer edge where trees grow tall, alders, black poplars, and firs that shot sky high, seasoned, drying for years, ideal for easy floating. Once she'd shown her guest where the tall timber stood, Calypso, the lustrous goddess, headed home again. He set to cutting trunks. The work was done in no time. 20 in all, he felled. He trimmed them clean with his axe and split them deftly, chewed them straight to the line. Meanwhile, the radiant goddess brought him drills. He bored through all his planks and wedged them snugly, docking them home together, locked with pegs and bolts. Broad in the beam and bottom flat as a merchantman when a master shipwright turns out a hull, so broad the craft Odysseus made himself. Working away at speed, he put up half-decks pinned to close-set ribs, and a sweep of gunwales rounded off the sides. He fashioned the mast next, and sank its yard in deep, and added a steering oar to hold her right on course. Then he fenced her stem to stern with twigs and wicker, bulwark against the sea surge, floored with heaps of brush. And lustrous Calypso came again, now with bolts of cloth to make the sail, and he finished that off too, expertly. Braces, sheets, and brails he rigged all fast on board, then eased her down with levers into the sunlit sea. That was the fourth day, and all his work was done. On the fifth, the lovely goddess launched him from her island, once she had bathed and decked him out in fragrant clothes. And Calypso stowed two skins aboard, dark wine in one, the larger one held water, added a sack of rations, filled with her choicest meats to build his strength, and summoned a wind to